Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
It's not even Black Monday, but we have another coach looking for work in the NFL. Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. Looking forward to today's show. We got a lot to get into, be it the NFL, college football, local sports. Typically, this is the best time of the year, right? We have the NBA off and rolling. College football national championship tonight. Ohio State, Alabama, 6 p.m. start time. The divisional round for the NFL playoffs is set. This will be the best football that you see all year. And what I mean by that is you have four games, two on Saturday, two on Sunday, and they will all be competitive. They all have their own taste of intrigue. And then we have the national championship. But we can't forget about the local sports scene. Huge weekend for Carbon High School. The Carbon Lady Dinos, now the number one team in the 3A classification after picking up a big win on Thursday. One game this week, they'll take on the Emory Lady Spartans. That'll be Thursday right here on KOAL. So we're going to talk to Coach Ted Bianco next segment here on the show. We'll break down last week's win over South Sevier, and we'll look ahead to this Thursday showdown with Emory, which will take place at Carbon High. Looking forward to that. But let's start by talking about a coaching change in the NFL. The Philadelphia Eagles, they have fired Doug Peterson, the only coach in franchise history to lead them to a Super Bowl, is now looking for work. Peterson was only there 5 years. And you would think that his job security was safe, right? I mean, let's rewind the hands of time. We go back to 2017. The Eagles are playing at an extremely high level. Their second-year quarterback, Carson Wentz, is soaring. They go into Los Angeles. They beat the Rams. They become 11-2. But in that game, Carson Wentz suffers a major injury. He's out the remainder of the year. It doesn't matter. Philadelphia still finds a way to close out the season with wins over the Giants and the Raiders. Then they top the Falcons, the Vikings, and the Patriots, and they win their first ever Super Bowl. Doug Peterson is the man. He did something that no other Philadelphia Eagle coach has ever done. He won a Super Bowl. And he did it with their franchise quarterback hurt. So then we have the make-believe quarterback controversy. But we all know that there's really no controversy, right? There can't be. It's Carson Wentz and it's Nick Foles, and we've seen this story before. So the Eagles go to the playoffs, they get a victory over the Chicago Bears, and then they advance to take on the New Orleans Saints, and Alshon Jeffrey drops a major pass that could have given them a victory over the Saints. Instead, their quest for back-to-back Super Bowls falls short. And in my mind, since that point, this Eagles team has never been the same. And I'm not blaming it on the Alshon Jeffrey drop, but it just seems like it's been one thing literally after another from that point on. The Eagles make the decision that it is Carson Wentz. He's their guy. Nick Foles moves on. He gets a payday in Jacksonville. Nobody's regretting that, right? Because it didn't work for Foles in Jacksonville. It didn't work for Foles in Chicago. It just hasn't worked. So nobody's looking at that and regretting anything. At least they shouldn't. So you fast forward, it's Carson Wentz's team last season. They get into the playoffs, but they fall to the Seattle Seahawks. And once again, in this game, Philadelphia could not rely on Carson Wentz because he couldn't stay healthy. So the quarterback was Josh McCown, who played on one leg, if memory serves me right. Played admirable, just could not get the victory. And then that brings us to the dumpster fire this year. Philadelphia may not have helped their own cause. They prove there's no faith in Carson Wentz by using a second-round pick to draft Jalen Hurts. and they play in historically one of the worst divisions in the history of the NFL, and they can't sniff the playoffs. And I 100% do not believe that Doug Peterson was let go by the Eagles today and owner Jeffrey Lurie because of a 4-11-1 season. I don't believe that. I believe that the reason Doug Peterson was let go today is the way the locker room has responded to his leadership. He showed none. He showed none throughout the entire year, and you had a franchise quarterback. So you thought. And I'm telling you, Jalen Hurts is not the guy. And then we see Nate Sudfeld in the regular season finale, and I understand what Doug Peterson was doing. He took a lot of grief from the media and from Eagle fans for going with Sudfeld late in the regular season finale, but it just seems like everything is up in the air and there isn't really any leadership. And once you lose a locker room, you know it's the beginning of the end. And according to reports, Lurie today was not sold on Peterson's plans regarding his coaching staff. He pushed for a passing game coordinator, a quarterback's coach. And all in all, when you look at the regression of Carson Wentz, that's a problem. And there is a lot of money invested into Carson Wentz. So you can look at the fact that the Philadelphia Eagles won a Super Bowl just a couple of years back. I agree with you. Doug Peterson, the only coach to ever get that done. That should account for something. I agree. But you can't hold on to Doug Peterson based on the fact that he won the Super Bowl 3-4 seasons ago if you don't believe in his vision for the future. Because ever since that drop in the divisional round, and maybe it was beforehand, right? Maybe it took place in that season. Just in my mind, it's etched when Alshon Jeffrey dropped that ball, which could have led to a game-winning touchdown against the Saints in the divisional round. Things have just gone downhill even further for Philly. If you don't believe in his vision, you have to get rid of him right now. Fair or not. Now, this also tells me that the Philadelphia Eagles as an organization still have faith in Carson Wentz. And they too believe that Jalen Hurts is not the answer. And so by letting go of Peterson right now, it actually helps Philadelphia's chances of fixing this fractured relationship with Carson Wentz. And I don't know what your opinion is on Wentz, but let's be real. A quarterback's not going to succeed with the lack of options put around Wentz. The eye test accounts for a lot, and there's some problems there, and I don't believe that Carson Wentz is healthy, and I don't know if he'll ever be healthy again, but the fact of the matter is there's not too many quarterbacks that will succeed with those amount of weapons. I mean, you just look at Tom Brady bolting from New England and going to Tampa Bay. He's a smart guy. He was in free agency. He looked at where the weapons were, and that's why he chose Tampa Bay. They got fantastic weapons. Quarterback needs that to succeed. Philly doesn't have that. And there are some problems to be fixed there, but I don't believe that they move on from Carson Wentz now, unless it's a complete blow-up and you just completely rebuild from the ground up, and I don't see that happening. I'm okay with this. Typically, I side with the coach, and I look at it and say, no way. This guy got a raw deal. Don't let the fact that they won a Super Bowl in 2017 tell you this isn't the right move, because there is a lack of leadership on the field and in the locker room in Philly, and that starts with Doug Peterson. I'm okay with this. He'll find another job quick. Maybe not a head job. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Maybe someone like the Jets calls Doug Peterson. It wouldn't surprise me. But he'll have a coordinator job in the NFL. There's no question about it. That's the big news today. Philadelphia now looking for a new head coach. Speaking of the coaching carousel, the Dallas Cowboys may in fact have their new defensive coordinator, Dan Quinn. And again, this is a great move. This is a great move. Dan Quinn, for all of his shortcomings as a head coach, coached in a Super Bowl, has a proven track record as a defensive coordinator. And also, when you take a look at what going with Dan Quinn would mean, it's a return of the scheme that the Cowboys used from 2013 to 2019 under Monty Kiffin, Rod Marinelli, Chris Richard. That's what that would say. A 4-3 scheme that's mostly used with a single high safety look. Any Cowboy fan that has watched football, watched their team this year, and understands the schemes would tell you, very simplistic approach under Nolan. Hybrid defense, multiple coverages, disguise a lot, you want to confuse offenses. That never happened. Never happened at all. Especially in a season where the offseason was so shortened. I mean, that was the problem with the Cowboys. really wasn't their offense. And so moving over to Dan Quinn, I love it. If that's the route that the Cowboys go, you got to be happy with that if you're a Cowboy fan. Always look for experience and proven track records. There are coaches that are meant to be coordinators, not head coaches. Dan Quinn, he's a defensive coordinator, and I would love this idea for him to go to Dallas. It looks like that's what's going to happen. It's not official yet, but that's what it looks like. That's the real two big storylines in the national sports front. Not a lot happening outside of that. As I alluded to, we do have the national championship coming up tonight. Alabama, 9-point favorites over Ohio State. This is going to be a high-scoring game tonight. You know, don't look at what Alabama's defense did against Notre Dame and say that they have fixed all their issues. They haven't. Notre Dame's not a high-flying offense. Ohio State is. They want to throw the football. Is Justin Fields 100%? Remember, he took a hit that resulted in a Clemson player being ejected from the game in that semifinal matchup. They probably had an easier time with Clemson than Bama did with Notre Dame, but still, Ohio State's only played 7 games. They're 7-0, looking for a national championship tonight. Look, we'll talk about this game, but I'll just tell you, the firepower that Alabama possesses offensively, I don't know if Ohio State can keep up. And I know I discounted Ohio State in the contest against Clemson. This is a different beast. This Alabama team is that good. 9-point favorites in the national championship, that should tell you something. I worry about Ohio State, even though Olave is coming back tonight. They have one of their best weapons on the outside. I don't know if they can keep pace with this blistering Alabama squad that has the best player in the country in Devontae Smith and one of the best quarterbacks in the country in Mac Jones. We'll talk more national championship a little bit later on in the show. And again, the final 8 in the NFL is set. How about that upset last night? The Cleveland Browns routing the Pittsburgh Steelers early on. Pittsburgh fought back, made it interesting at the end. But the Browns picking up their first victory, their playoff victory on the road. I believe it was the first time since like 92? My goodness. Good for Cleveland. Now they go to Kansas City, and they're probably going to get just belted in that game. But nonetheless, kudos to the Browns facing all the adversity that they did over the weekend. 2 6 seeds advance, the Browns and the Rams. They both now get the number 1 seeds, Packers Chiefs, which is obviously the odds-on favorite for the Super Bowl. If we have time, we'll talk playoffs a little bit later on as well. We typically save that for tomorrow on Football Tuesday, but we'll dive into it tonight and at least look at the previews. That's what's coming up here on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Local sports recap straight ahead. Plus, we're going to be joined by Coach Ted Bianco. That's straight ahead right here on Drive Time Sports.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're going to talk more high school basketball today on the Coach's Corner. A lot to get into. It was a very busy weekend here in the Castle Country. A very good weekend for the Carbon Lady Dinos. They picked up a victory last Thursday over the number one ranked team in the 3A classification. That was the South Sevier Rams, and we're going to talk about that and more right now with Coach Ted Bianco with the Carbon Lady Dinos joining us right now. Coach, always a pleasure. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Coach. There is a new number one as far as the RPI is concerned, and that is the Carbon Lady Dinos following a victory over South Sevier. Coach, going into last week, there were 4 teams in the 3A classification that had 1 loss. Now there's only 2 teams, Carbon and Judge Memorial. So when you look at the rankings, before we dive into the game, I know you and I have had this conversation before in the past. Rankings are what they are. They're just rankings. But in the same sense, it's got to boost the confidence of the girls seeing that they're the number one team in the state now.
I think it helps, but I don't think we're the number one team in the state anymore because of how the RPI works. And so it was interesting. We were number one on Friday until after Friday's games were played. South Sevier actually had a chance to go play Beaver that afternoon, and they won that game. And a couple teams that we had beaten lost. So as an effect, it had that little bit of a change in the numbers in the RPI and moved us back down to 2. So it's a very fluid situation, and it's very strange.
It is. As of right now, looking at the RPI, it has Carbon number 1, but it is by the slimmest of margins.
We moved back up again. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's It's good. I think I have a feeling it's going to be that way the whole year,
sure,
to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I really do, because I think that things are going to be moving around. Just, you know, the biggest thing is take care of business.
Mm-hmm.
Win your games, and you should be where you want to be. And you know what? If you're the top five teams in the state, you're all pretty even anyways. So it's going to be a battle no matter where we're at to end the season.
Well, Coach, we'll talk about the game against South Sevier, because you alluded to top five teams in the state are going to be pretty similar. This is a team that's going to be there in the end, yet you guys managed to come out on the road, no less, and put up an 18-4 run in the opening quarter. I mean, you talk about setting the tempo, setting the pace of the game. That's exactly what you guys did in this contest.
Well, and it was something that we had to do. I mean, our defensive effort in that game was as good as I've seen it. I was extremely proud of what our girls accomplished. I mean, then we came out and we set the tempo on the defensive end of the floor. They missed a lot of shots. We did a pretty good job of rebounding, and then we got the ball up the floor as quickly as possible. So it was overall a great night for us, and something that really helped us hopefully gain some confidence going into this week's game against Emory.
Yeah, no doubt, Coach. We know that this team has a defensive identity, but you did get 15 points from Janzi Jensen in this contest. I know defensively you guys were very active, but anytime you can get 15 from Janzi, I know it kind of opens up things offensively. And again, the balance was fantastic. I mean, outside of that, you got 8 points from Alexander Cartwright. McKenna Blank had 8 points. Maddie Orth had 7. Sydney Orth had 5. And so the scoring was really balanced, but Janzi scored 15. What allowed her to do that?
She just shot the ball with confidence, and she was wide open. They left her open on a couple easy shots, and she took advantage of it. And she wasn't rushing anything. She took her time, pulled up, and nailed the shot. And she got to the basket. She was able to get herself to the basket, and she got fouled and went to the free throw line, shot free throws well, and finished around the basket. So she really came alive in that game. And the other girl that really came alive that I thought did a heck of a job for us was Alexandra Cartwright. She was wide open for a lot of weak side shots, and had a really good night.
Coach, if we talk about individual performances, I know points are typically the first thing that stand out in the box score, but we have to talk about Sydney Orth and her 16 rebounds. If I'm not mistaken, 10 of those come on the defensive side of the ball, which against a team like South Sevier, limiting them to one shot on multiple occasions, I mean, that's a recipe for success, and Sydney was great on the glass.
Well, and she didn't. I mean, she didn't light up the scoreboard by any means. I think she ended up with 5 points, but she was attacking, and she was attacking the boards hard. And when she'd get the rebound, she'd push it up the floor. She got a lot of steals for us and a lot of deflections, which really helped our team have the success that they needed. South Sevier, you know, they lost two of their better players last year, but they're still a very good basketball team, and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with throughout the year. So they're. We can't slouch off against them the next time we see them. Every game is going to be a tough game for us, and we have to approach every game the same way.
Even with that mindset, Coach, when you get to the locker room following a win like this on the road, what was that scene like?
Oh, you want to celebrate, that's for sure. It's always fun to walk in there and see all the smiles and them cheering and laughing and having a good time after the game, and that's what this is about. We want our kids to have as much fun as possible, and I told them, I said, well, one down, 9 to go, and they all were excited about that. So hopefully they understand that they have an opportunity to be one of the top teams in 3A this year. They've proven it until this point. We just got to keep moving forward, and we don't have time to step backwards for sure.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Ted Bianco with the Carbon Lady Dino basketball team, 1-0 in Region 12 play, 10-1 overall. And, Coach, you mentioned Emory. It doesn't get much easier. In fact, looking at the RPI, here was this Emory team sitting at 3-3, but they had a very challenging non-region schedule. Only got to play 6 games, and a lot of those games were against squads upper classification. And so I looked at the game against Richfield. I thought this is a great gauge game to see where Emory truly is. Tough to see by that region schedule. They pass with flying colors. They get a victory on the road against Richfield, who I believe at the time was number 2, if memory serves me right. And so this is another very stout game. Great competition on Thursday night.
Well, it was a great win for them. It's tough to win on Richfield's floor for sure. And Richfield, you know, they have their two bigs back. They lost a lot of guards, but they have a freshman guard that's coming in that's pretty good, and they have a few other guards from last year that got a lot of time that'll have a lot of experience going into the games that we have to play against them. So I watched some of that Richfield game on the TV, and they didn't look as good as I thought they'd be in that game. I don't know what's going on. It seemed like something was going on, and I thought Emory played really well. And we're going to have, like I said, we're going to have our hands full with them on Thursday night. Emory shoots the ball well. They got their big girl back, it looks like. The Tuttle girl is playing extremely well, and they like to drive to the basket, and they like to shoot the outside shot. They like to drive and kick, and we really need to focus on where the Tuttle girl's at and making sure that she doesn't get loose during the game. So we got our work cut out for us on Thursday, and our girls have to step up to that challenge. And totally different week, totally different outcomes can happen, and hopefully our girls are up to the task.
Yeah, when I look at this Emory team, Coach, you mentioned them getting a big back, which obviously changes things up, but the versatility of Tambri Tuttle is unique. And I know that every team that we see in the top five, they're going to have a girl that can take over the game in some form or another. And this would be Emory's and Tambri Tuttle. It's not the first time that you've seen her play. When you look at the difficulties that she can present offensively to your defense, what stands out to you?
Well, she can shoot from outside. She can drive to the basket, and she can post up. So we basically have to know where she's at all times. And if she's posted up, we need to make sure we're not giving her an easy shot. If she's driving, we've got to make sure that we're stepping and making her make a decision on whether she's going to shoot pass. And if she's shooting an outside shot, we have to contest. And if we can find her and we know where she's at, I think we have some girls that can get up and challenge that. And then we can't give them second shot opportunities. We have to rebound. We have to go to the board strong. And when their big girl gets inside and she plays against us, we have to make sure we get a body on her, and we have to be a little bit physical with her and making sure that she just doesn't take over the game. So, like I said, we got our work cut out for us, but I think we have a group that can handle it.
Yeah, Coach, just looking at the schedule and what lies ahead for this team, and I know you and I have had this conversation before, but I got to bring it up once again. The competition that you will see night in and night out in Region 12, it's a big difference than what we saw 3 years ago. It's got to be fun for a head coach to know that every time you step out there on the floor, you're going to play a team that's potentially a top five team in the state night in and night out. I mean, what better way to prepare your girls for a state championship tournament?
Well, and if you think back to when we were in the other region that we moved from into this one, we had the first year we were in that region, there were three teams that were very competitive with each other, and it was us, Juab, and Union, and it was a battle every time one of those two played each other, and it ended up being a three-way tie for the region championship, and rightfully so, because all three of those teams deserved it. And we, you know, unfortunately, we ended up matched up with Emory in the state tournament, who had probably the best 3A team that I've ever played against, that took it to us big time and won the state championship 2 years in a row. So, that's what we had to look forward going to the state tournament is who do we get to play? Well, you get to play the best team in the state, basically, which was a good challenge for us. But we weren't prepared for that as much as we would have been had we been in a region like we're in now. The second year, the same thing. We had a team that was 20-4. We hadn't lost to a team in Utah the whole year. We turn around and we go into that. Actually, we're 20-2 going into the state tournament, and we go into that game against Richfield, you know, and we were in shell shock because we hadn't seen that kind of competition for a while. You've got to play against good teams in order to be prepared, and this is what Region 12 has done. And in my opinion, Region 12 is the best 3A region in the state.
Yeah, and I think you can make that case in boys basketball as well. I mean, it's just loaded front to back. Coach, now that you guys have somewhat of a down week, it's kind of the last week before you hop into that regular routine schedule of getting games every Tuesday and Thursday, and then there's some sort of normalcy to what you'll see from this point on. How do you approach the game on Thursday? I mean, is it just heavy, go at it each day in practice leading up to Thursday?
Well, for us, it's going to be all about preparation and preparing, making us better at what we do and getting ready for what Emory's going to try and do to us. We've got to be well prepared for what they're going to throw at us or we will lay a huge egg on our floor, and we don't want to do that. It's nice to have 3 days of practice in preparation for that one game, but in the same sense, we still have to make sure that we're keeping ourselves in shape. We still have to make sure that, we're doing the things that we normally do in practice. So these first couple practices this week will probably be a little bit more harder than what they will be in the future. But it's not going to be anything, like a week-long preparation for your season. It's not going to be anything like that. So we'll do our normal preparation with a little extra conditioning and things thrown in there here and there.
Well, Coach, I definitely appreciate you again taking out the time. Congratulations on that win against South Sevier, and best of luck on Thursday against Emory.
Hey, thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. A lot happening in the NFL. The divisional rounds are set. Plus, tonight, it's the national championship, Alabama and Ohio State. It's all coming up when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
The stage for the national championship is set in college football. Tonight, number one Alabama versus number three Ohio State. Entertaining matchup. And as I pointed out at the beginning of the show, I did not expect Ohio State to be here. I thought we'd get Bama Clemson. I was wrong. Ohio State looked brilliant against Clemson. And it begs the question, can anyone beat Alabama? Because the way that college football is moving, it used to be you had to have an athletic quarterback. A pocket-passing quarterback in college football has never actually been the recipe for a national championship. We've seen elite quarterbacks, can't-miss prospects. Andrew Luck being one of them. So good when he was in college. Peyton Manning. Those guys didn't win national championships. See, quarterbacks in college win national championships that never sniff the NFL. It became a point, I think, about 10 years ago. If you had an athletic quarterback, you had a chance, an elite athletic quarterback, you had a chance to win a national championship, and most of those squads did. Every now and then, you would get a quarterback like a Sam Bradford that went to Oklahoma. He was fantastic in all aspects of the game. I don't know that an athletic quarterback that can sling it down the field, that's not the way college football works anymore. You have to have success. You have to have speed and ability on the outside. And that's what makes Alabama so deadly. Maybe they're trendsetters. You know, I call the NFL a copycat league. A little bit more difficult in college football to be a copycat because you have to go out and get the talent. In the NFL, we have this elite pool of athletes. That's not the case in college football. Alabama, yeah, they recruit. At this point, it seems like it's almost easy for Nick Saban. You know, like Gino Auriemma in girls college basketball. He had his pick at the top five at any position in any given year. Now, I don't know that Saban's at that point, but he's close to it. And they have 50 of the top 500 recruits over the last 5 years. Think about that. So Alabama's really, really good, and they looked really, really good against Notre Dame, a team that had a pretty good defense, and they didn't even have Jalen Waddle. He's going to play tonight. And I think you see a completely different look. If you haven't watched much Alabama football, and the first time you watched this team, it was against Notre Dame in the semifinals, you probably just marveled at Najee Harris and Devontae Smith. And that was it. I mean, after the Notre Dame game, you knew Devontae Smith, best player in college football. Well, his teammate Jalen Waddle, who didn't play in that game, he's a top 10 NFL pick. And so when I talk about winning in today's college football, it's having the options on the perimeter. Flashy receivers with great hands. You know who Clemson did not have? They didn't have Justin Ross. And it changed the dynamic of their offense completely. Jalen Waddle's going to make his presence felt in this game tonight for Alabama. Now, with that being said, is it impossible for Ohio State to win? No, I'm not saying that. I do believe Alabama will cover the 9-point spread. But it's not impossible for this Ohio State team to win. And I'll tell you how Ohio State can win this game. By two things. Taking advantage, for one, on the outside. Because we talk about Waddle, we talk about Devontae Smith. Ohio State has two receivers on the outside that are pretty dang good at football. Chris Olave, and if you go back to the semifinal game against Clemson, Justin Fields, under pressure, delivered a dime to Olave. It was a 56-yard touchdown. He never had to break stride. He got behind the Clemson secondary. And we saw this in the Florida game. We saw this in the Ole Miss game. Those were the two games where you looked at Alabama's defense and you questioned just how elite they really were. Quote-unquote holes, right? That's how you could keep pace with Alabama. teams that have two legit weapons on the perimeter. Well, Ohio State has two legit weapons on the perimeter. And I believe that's how they can hang into this game. Because if Saban and Alabama decide that they're going to focus on Garrett Wilson, focus on Chris Olave, I believe they have 60% of Ohio State's receiving yards and touchdown catches. This is where Ohio State can really make an imprint, and that's Trey Sermon, who has been fantastic for the Buckeyes over the last couple of weeks. 4.6 yards per carry. That's what he was averaging at the beginning of the season, and that average has gone up drastically. He was fantastic in the game against Northwestern, 331 yards. That was in the Big Ten title game, and they needed all 331 of those yards. He's not going to do that tonight against Bama, but he needs to rush for a sizable margin like he did against Clemson. He finished with 195 yards in that game. He's got size. He's 6'1", but he knows how to get skinny. He knows how to run in between the numbers. He can get outside as well. He's going to be key tonight for Ohio State. It's got to be a track meet. That's what Alabama wants it to be. I don't believe that you're going to see a ground and pound type performance tonight from Alabama. I don't think that's what you're going to see. Mac Jones, Devontae Smith, Najee Harris, who was also a first round pick. Yeah, think about that. They have a top five quarterback as far as prospects for the NFL draft. I believe that Najee Harris is going to be a first round pick. Jaylen Waddle, Devontae Smith, they're both top 10 picks. You see the NFL talent that they possess. And I know that Justin Fields is good. I think Justin Fields is really good. But I'm telling you, this talent on the outside, it's a problem for so many teams. And so in my mind, Ryan Day, who's a terrific offensive mind, is going to have to be a genius. Because you look at, again, Ole Miss, they're led by an offensive-minded coach. Florida, led by an offensive-minded coach. Do you want to put up crazy numbers to beat Bama? I think you have to. And again, I can use the Notre Dame game in the semifinal as a reference to that logic. The Irish are a team that want to convert on third and short. They want 8-minute long drives. They got one in that game, and it was 14-7 at that point in time. But then Alabama just tore it up again on the perimeter. They got that 7 points back in like 3 minutes. That doesn't work against Bama. You have to make it a track meet. And when you look at what Clemson brought to the table against Ohio State without Justin Ross, it's a dynamic offense. You have the best quarterback in the country. You have Travis Etienne, who's one of the best running backs in the country. But the Tigers don't have the speed and ability on the outside that Ohio State has to make it a game. I don't even know what the over-under is on this game. Take the over, whatever it is. But Alabama winning by two scores, yeah, I think it's very possible. I think it's very possible. I think Alabama wins this game anywhere 10 to 17 points, maybe close for a while, but you're going to see Ohio State play with an act of desperation at some point in time in this game, and that's when Alabama is going to make their mark. I just don't think they have the ability to keep pace with this offense. I would love to be wrong. I think it'd make for an interesting storyline if a team with 8 wins won the national championship. But when I watch this Bama team, it's just so much NFL talent across the board. And the idea that this defense is not elite, I'm talking about Bama, that's one thing that we really have to be careful in saying, because there's high expectations based off what we have seen over the past 10 years from this Alabama squad. This defense isn't as good as what Saban has put out in the past, but they're still pretty good. Most complete team in college football. I don't think there's any doubt. I think at the beginning of the year, we saw this team give up, 28 or whatever it was to A&M, and we thought, okay, maybe there's some holes defensively. Maybe there are some teams that can match up with this Bama team because of what they give up defensively. They're going to play a bend-but-don't-break role tonight, and they will make it difficult for Justin Fields once they get inside the 20-yard line. The point I can stress about Bama, I think they're like 7th in the SEC, but aside from that, they're number one in red zone defense, and that's going to be crucial in tonight's game. The other storyline is Justin Fields and what he did with his draft stock. We already had people talking about him surpassing Trevor Lawrence. As far as the draft is concerned, that's not going to happen. Lawrence is the number one pick. But if Justin Fields comes out tonight and he dazzles, and Ohio State gets the win, and we look at Olave's numbers, and we look at Sermon even coming out of the backfield, and Fields being athletic enough, because he is, he's extremely athletic, and he's got great field vision, and he's not even 100%, and he just dazzles tonight. That's a storyline that you're going to hear over the next couple of months. Is Fields the number one quarterback in the NFL draft? I don't think so. I don't think it should be a topic of discussion. But Fields has a lot to play for tonight in that regard. Final score prediction tonight, I'm going to go with Alabama 41-27. I think they win by 14. I picked that score in the Notre Dame game as well. I was close. What was it, 31-17? I think it was the 31-14, excuse me. It was a 17-point win. 41-24. I can see that happening. Just too much firepower on the outside. And I think once Bama develops a two-score lead, you'll see a lot of Najee Harris. You'll see a lot of ball control to keep Justin Fields on the sideline. And that's what I worry about happening in this game. Give me Bama to win the national championship. I think they're the best team in college football. We're going to break one more time. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of the show. The final eight in the NFL is set. 2-6 seeds. We'll talk about that when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
Yeah, running down a dream that never would come to me. Running down a dream.
Back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Few minutes left. Don't forget, national championship coming up tonight, 6 p.m. Bama, Ohio State. Who you taking?
Alabama.
Yeah, I take Bama. They cover the 9-point spread. Yep. Although I think it will be an entertaining game. Let's step away from that. Kind of a preview for what we're going to have on the show tomorrow, Football Tuesday, the NFL playoffs. And now we're down to the final eight. 2-6 seeds pick up victories. I don't know if you could call either one of them a big shock. I think the fashion that Cleveland won last night may be a shock. But now the fact that the Browns beat the Steelers. Steelers lost 5 out of their last 6 games to close out the season.
Yeah, they were fool's gold.
Think about that. They were 11-0, finished 12-4, got knocked out in the divisional round, or the wild card round, excuse me, of the playoffs. Biggest surprise for you over the weekend was what?
Biggest surprise? Probably just the way Cleveland handled their business. I mean, it's not a surprise they won. Just like you said, the fashion that they won that game, I think, was, you know, Pittsburgh from the get-go just was out of sorts, and that's the way they were playing down the stretch, and you knew that they weren't going to make a deep run. You probably figured that they weren't going to win that game.
I thought they'd win the game going into it, but it became abundantly clear to me that Ben Roethlisberger, who, look, I respect everything that that guy put forth on the field this year. That guy's got the arm and an elbow and the shoulder of a 50-year-old man, and he's got the scrambling ability of Bernie Kosar at this point in time in his career, and it's a team that can't run the football. It's not a recipe for success come postseason play, and for anyone that thought that Pittsburgh's defense was going to be able to handle the weapons of Cleveland, that became abundantly clear early that they could not. It's not a team that you want to play from behind against. It just didn't work out. On the flip side, the other 6 squad, I was surprised that so many pundits thought that Seattle would beat the Rams. That surprised me. That team's built to beat Seattle.
Yeah, we said that. The Rams defense is going to go into Seattle, and they're going to limit what the Seahawks want to do. That's why you and I both picked the Rams, and the Rams are going to upset Green Bay this weekend.
I'm picking the Rams to beat the Packers, and the reason I'm picking the Rams to beat the Packers is because I think the blueprint was laid out last year on how to beat San Francisco, or how to beat Green Bay. San Francisco did it. How did they do it? They dominated the line of scrimmage. Raheem Mostert became a household name. What did he run for? 210 yards or something like that? That's how you beat Green Bay. And I think that their rushing defense has gotten marginally better. They're middle of the field. But if the Rams control the line of scrimmage, Cam Akers had 172 yards in the first half of that game, all-purpose yards. He was incredible in that contest. One offensive touchdown, it was all Cam Akers. He went the length of the field. You do that against Green Bay, they'll win the football game. I think it's that simple. Now, the cold weather is going to play a factor, and we'll talk about that on the show tomorrow. But that 6-3, that did not surprise me in the least. Chicago surprised me yesterday. They had an opportunity to win that game. It was offensively.
That's why I'm not picking the Saints to do anything. The Saints are going to lose to Tampa Bay.
Yeah, let me end with this thought on the Chicago Bears, because I know we have Bears fans out there. Isn't it the most Chicago Bear thing ever that Mitch Trubisky leads them to the playoffs? They decline the fifth-year option. They may have to franchise Mitch Trubisky to bring him back for a year. Otherwise, they don't have a quarterback. Is that not the most Chicago Bears thing that you have heard? Mitch Trubisky may be franchised this offseason because they declined that fifth-year option.
Yeah, the Bears doing what the Bears do, screwing things up.
Yeah, if Trubisky gets franchised, I'm going to laugh.
He got the Nickelodeon trophy, so good for him.
No, that was Mick Trubisky that got that, not Mitch Trubisky. Maybe they should have started Mick Trubisky in that game. I don't know. Four games, I think it's going to be very entertaining. Bills, Ravens, love it.
I like Buffalo in that game. I think their defense, it can contain Lamar. So I like Buffalo in that one. I think it's going to be Buffalo, Kansas City.
And then we get the Chiefs, the Browns, Rams, Packers, and Saints, Buccaneers. Third time around, I'm curious. New Orleans beat them twice in the regular season, beat them badly the first go-around. Third time, you never know what's going to happen over the third matchup. And we'll talk about those games on the show tomorrow. We'll also recap the national championship between Bama and Ohio State tonight. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. We will catch you tomorrow. Be safe. We're out.